Today is Wednesday, May 19th, and you are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, EU calls for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas.
Priority is the immediate cessation of all violence and implementation of a ceasefire, not only agreed, but to implement a ceasefire.
Plus, Congress approves bill to fight hate crimes against Asian Americans.
A bill intended to curtail a rise in hate crimes against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders is on its way to President Joe Biden's desk.
Also, WFP says millions of children are starving in Madagascar. Our top story today is in the Middle East. Israel bombarded Gaza with airstrikes and Hamas forces kept up cross-border rocket fire on Wednesday, with no firm sign of any imminent ceasefire despite international calls to end more than a week of fighting. Israeli leaders said they were pressing on with an offensive against Hamas and Islamic militants, but an Israeli military spokesman acknowledged that with an estimated 12,000 missiles and mortars in the group's Gaza arsenal, they still have enough rockets to fire. The Israeli military said about 50 rockets were fired overnight from Gaza, with sirens sounding in the city of Ashdod, south of Tel Aviv, and in communities closer to the Gaza border. Gaza medical officials said about 220 Palestinians have been killed, including 63 children, and more than 1,400 wounded since the fighting began on May 10th. Israeli authorities say 12 people have been killed in Israel, including two children. In a 25-minute attack overnight, 52 Israeli aircraft struck Hamas tunnels in the southern Gaza Strip, the Israeli military said. It said 40 targets were hit in the operation. European Union foreign ministers called Tuesday for a ceasefire between Israel and the Palestinian Islamic group Hamas and boosted humanitarian aid for Gaza, but failed to reach the unanimity that might give the EU leverage in peacemaking. Hungary, Israel's closest ally in the bloc, declined to join the other 26 foreign ministers in calling for a truce on their video call convened by EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell. The other ministers vowed that the EU will try to relaunch the peace process along with the United States, Russia, and the United Nations.
Priority is the immediate cessation of all violence and implementation of a ceasefire, not only agreed, but to implement a ceasefire. The purpose is to protect civilians and to give full humanitarian access in Gaza. We condemn the rocket attacks by Hamas and other terrorist groups on the Israel territory. And we fully support Israel's right to defense. But we have also considered and stated that this has to be done in a proportionate manner and respecting international humanitarian law. We have to explore how to re-engage, how we can build confidence building, how to can improve the living condition of the people, and how we can open the path to a potential relaunching of the peace process.
Jordan's Prime Minister Bashar al-Kassani says his country may expel the Israeli ambassador after Parliament issued a call due to escalating violence between Israelis and Palestinians. King Abdullah II is conducting intense diplomacy to try to stop the dangerous escalation amid concerns, observers suggest, should the crisis prompt another wave of Palestinian refugees into Jordan. In talks with his Jordanian counterpart, U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken said that both Israelis and Palestinians equally deserve to live in safety and security. Dave Gavlak reports from Amman.
Jordan has a 1994 peace treaty with Israel, and for years it has also been the chief supporter of Palestinian statehood. Public anger in the country, where Palestinian refugees and their descendants make up more than half of its 10 million population, is now boiling over. Large angry demonstrations here demand an end to forced evictions of Palestinian families in Jerusalem and deadly bombardment in Gaza. Bruce Riddell, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, says King Abdullah is correct when he has repeatedly warned that the lack of a just solution to the Palestinian problem would lead to the explosion of the situation in the region.
King Abdullah has been saying for 20 years that failure to address the root cause of the Israeli-Arab conflict will sooner or later result in explosions. As we've seen, the Jordanian position has always been that the world community, and the United States in particular, needs to put pressure on Israel to create a Palestinian state with its capital in East Jerusalem to represent the homeland for for the Palestinian people.
Jordanian officials have expressed concerns about any spillover of violence in Israel and the Palestinian territories that could lead to another mass migration of Palestinians into Jordan after the 1948 and 1967 refugee waves, although Riddell doesn't necessarily see this happening. What's more worrisome is violence between Israeli Jews and Israeli Arabs.
They also do fear refugee flows. On the other hand, two previous intifadas in the West Bank, 1988 and 2000, just did not produce significant flows of refugees. It's a concern, but it's not an inevitability by any means. What's particularly dangerous about this situation, and largely unprecedented, is that we see these mobs and vigilantes on both sides, but especially on the Israeli side, attacking Israeli Arabs. The social contract between Israeli Jews and Israeli Arabs is coming apart. That augurs very poorly for the future of Israel.
Palestinian journalist Daoud Kotob, writing in a Los Angeles Times op-ed piece, urged Israel and the Palestinians, including Hamas, to talk. At this point, the idea of deterring conflict has become elusive because of the absence of a serious negotiation process, he said. Short of surrender, no conflict in the world can be solved by military means. Any resolution depends on negotiations, and naturally that means talking with your enemies, not your friends, Kotob said. With diplomatic efforts so far unable to stop the violence, the top U.S. military officer, Army General Mark Milley, warned that the violence could risk broader destabilization. Dale Gablack for VOA News, Amman.
The U.S. Congress has approved a bill to fight hate crimes against Asian Americans. AP correspondent Mike Garcia reports.
A bill intended to curtail a rise in hate crimes against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders is on its way to President Joe Biden's desk. The House passed the legislation on a 364-62 vote Tuesday in a bipartisan stand against attacks that have increased during the coronavirus pandemic. The Senate had previously passed the legislation on a resounding 94-1 vote in April. The bill will expedite the review of hate crimes at the Justice Department and make grants available for local law enforcement agencies to improve their investigation, identification, and reporting of incidents driven by bias. Biden has said he will sign the legislation. Mike Gracia, Washington.
New data show that the birth rate in the United States dropped significantly for every major race and age group during the past year. Experts blame uncertainty over the coronavirus pandemic for part of the decline, but also say the U.S. COVID baby bust, unquote, reflects long-running trends in other developed nations. VOA's Laurel Bowman has the story.
Experts say the COVID-19 pandemic surely contributed to last year's big decline, but they also blame economic anxiety. Many Americans' health insurance depends on their employer.
Children are very expensive, and certainly job security, it would be a factor in that. And I think that's one of the compounding factors with the pandemic is sort of the underlying uncertainty about job security.
Deidre Miller is an OBGYN and fertility nurse and a mother herself. She says cost is big on the minds of parents wanting children, especially during COVID.
One of the main questions that we hear from patients is, what am I going to be billed after delivery or even during, you know, their ultrasounds and things? How much is this going to cost? I actually had my daughter last year in March, so she is 14 months old now. Of course, the cost was a huge factor. I might have gotten better care if I had been to a larger hospital. That was a concern of mine. Am I going to get this large, you know, $36,000 bill, $30,000 bill for being a patient there?
While unpredictable billing in the U.S. healthcare system is a factor in the trend, the situation overall is the same in developed countries with universal healthcare. Economics professor Philip Levine of Wellesley College spoke to us via Skype.
There's something systematic about the development of modern economies where preferences towards childbearing are changing. Women want to be more committed to the labor force. That's not really consistent with having a large family. And those sorts of changes in attitudes, I think, are a better explanation given the fact that it is, you know, so universal among developed countries.
These birth trends have long-term impacts. In the 1950s, the post-war baby boom in the United States and other countries affected politics, economies, and culture. Researchers say the current American baby bust will likely have the same far-reaching effect. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
A cyclone on India's west coast killed at least 19 people and damaged infrastructure and agriculture. While heavy rains continued to lash some regions on Tuesday, Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters reports.
A powerful cyclone has left a trail of destruction along the northwestern coast of India. Packing winds of 130 miles per hour, Cyclone Tauktae made landfall late on Monday, uprooting trees and electricity lines. Authorities are now concerned about the steady supply of oxygen to hospitals overwhelmed by COVID-19. The storm has hampered India's fight against the disease. Ahead of Tauktae's arrival, hundreds of thousands of people had to be evacuated from coastal areas in the state of Gujarat. Vaccinations were suspended for 2 days, while hospitals awaited backup generators to keep power running. The cyclone weakened after it made landfall, but at least a dozen people have already died in the storm. The Indian Navy said it had rescued 146 people from one of two barges that were adrift near the Mumbai coastline. In Gujarat, no damages have been reported at the refineries and seaports that were expected to be in the storm's path. The country's biggest private port was able to open on Tuesday. The cyclone was the most powerful one to hit India in more than two decades.
This is the Voice of America. The Russian parliament's lower house has voted to withdraw from an international treaty allowing surveillance flights over military facilities following the United States' departure from the pact. The Russian exit from the Open Skies Treaty is yet to be endorsed by the upper house of parliament and needs to be signed by President Vladimir Putin to take effect. Moscow has signaled its readiness to reverse the withdrawal procedure and stay in the treaty if the U.S. returns to the agreement. Lebanon's acting foreign minister has stepped down after he suggested in a TV interview this week that Gulf Arab countries had provided backing to extremists helping the rise of the Islamic State group. The minister also used the term, quote, Bedouin, unquote, in a derogatory manner to describe Gulf Arab nationals. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Spain has deployed troops to Ceuta to patrol the border with Morocco after thousands of migrants swam into the northern African enclave in what Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez called a serious crisis for Spain and Europe. Soria Ali of Reuters reports.
As many as 6,000 migrants from Morocco, including around 1,500 minors, swam into the Spanish city of Ceuta on Monday and Tuesday, according to the country's interior ministry. Footage from local Faro TV channel showed soldiers in armored vehicles rushing to the beach as hundreds of potential migrants stood on the Moroccan side of the fence. Reuters journalists saw Red Cross workers helping migrants laying on the floor. At least one person died in the crossing, according to a local government spokesperson. The adult arrivals were being transferred to a local soccer stadium to be deported back to Morocco. Spain's interior minister said at least 2,700 have already been sent back. Minors were being sent to an industrial building. In a televised speech, Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez called it a serious crisis for Spain and Europe.
As Spain's Prime Minister, my priority at this moment is to guarantee the control of transit through the border with Morocco, provide the cities of Ceuta and Melilla with everything they need to resolve the humanitarian crisis as a result of the arrival of people, and to proceed with the immediate return, I repeat, immediate return of everyone who has made an irregular entrance to Ceuta and Melilla, as stipulated in the agreements Spain and Morocco signed years ago.
The arrival of the migrants come at a time of increased tension between Spain and Morocco over the fate of Western Sahara independence leader Brahim Ghali, the leader of the Polisario Front, who is being treated in a Spanish hospital. The Polisario Front wants the Western Sahara to be an independent state rather than part of Morocco. The United States in December recognized Moroccan sovereignty over the Western Sahara territory. Some experts say Morocco uses the tactic of allowing migrants into Ceuta as an instrument of pressure on Madrid. Ceuta has a population of 80,000 and is located on the northern tip of Morocco across from Gibraltar. It has long been a magnet for African migrants trying to reach Europe in search of a better life.
That's Soraya Ali of Reuters. Following a lull in arrivals of migrants in Italy due to the pandemic, hundreds have now resumed risking their lives in search for a better future in Europe. As weather conditions improve and with the easing of COVID-19 restrictions in Italy, traffickers are taking advantage and overcrowding vessels with migrants from the Libyan coastline. For VOA, Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
Rescue missions to save hundreds of migrants have resumed in the Mediterranean waters between Libya and the small Italian island of Lampedusa, as calm seas and warmer temperatures have seen a significant rise in vessels attempting to make the crossing. Human traffickers are also taking advantage of a drop in COVID-19 infections and lifting of restrictions to travel between regions in Italy. The improving situation is raising concerns that the surge in migrant crossings will continue during the summer. Aid workers aboard the German charity ship CI4, which began its first mission to help migrants in distress at the beginning of this month, say the vessel has already rescued more than 400 people. They are calling on EU officials to give the ship access to a safe port. A spokesman on board the ship, Sophie Weidenhiller, says the migrants were from different African nations, some from Syria and Bangladesh, and were rescued in various operations. In one case, it reached a boat after receiving a distress call, but instead of finding the expected 50 migrants on board, it found the boat empty. Many migrants are attempting the crossing in vessels that are deemed far from seaworthy.
Less than 72 hours, our crew was able to rescue more than 400 people out of distress at sea. Among them, we have pregnant women, we have children, we have babies, we have many unaccompanied minors, and everybody aboard here is exhausted. And that is why we need a port of safety as soon as possible, so we can bring those people who have suffered so much to safety.
The German charity has warned that the crew is nearing the limit of their capacity to care for its migrant passengers. It is still awaiting a response from the EU on its request for permission to dock as it heads towards Italy. Malta refused it entry to its port. Commenting on the matter following the Maltese decision, Matteo Salvini, head of Italy's right-wing League Party, said his country has a duty to defend its borders. The latest rescues come a week after more than 2,000 migrants landed on Lampedusa, overwhelming its reception centre, which was then emptied so as to make space for new arrivals. Migrants have continued to arrive on the island. The Libyan Coast Guard has also been intercepting vessels and returning the migrants. UN and other agencies have said that over the past week they managed to take 1,000 migrants back to Libya. International Organization for Migration spokesman in Libya, Safa Mzeli, said it provides support to the Libyan Coast Guard on the condition that no one is arbitrarily detained or otherwise subjected to human rights violations. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
In India, the healthcare crisis triggered by the ferocious second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic is shifting from the big cities to smaller towns and villages, combating the spread in rural areas where two-thirds of the country lives, health experts say, has emerged as India's next challenge. From Mumbai, Anjana Patricia has this report.
Relatives try to help loved ones suffering from COVID-19 at a hospital in a small town in North India. In a village, people with symptoms of the deadly virus are treated outdoors because residents said they had no option of accessing health facilities.
When people go to a hospital, they hear that there are no beds, there is no treatment available, and there are no doctors or healthcare workers. When they go to private hospitals or doctors' clinics, they get just a prescription for medicines. Patients are helpless.
In villages, grieving families tell stories of how they are losing loved ones to the virus as the pandemic's second wave rages in rural India after slowing down in big cities such as New Delhi. Prime Minister Narendra Modi has sounded a grim warning.
This infection is now spreading to villages very rapidly. All governments of the country are trying everything to stop this. The awareness of people in the villages and the cooperation of the village governing bodies is just as important in controlling this spread.
हमारी पंचायती राज से जुड़े जो भी व्यवस्थाएं हैं उनका सहयोग उनकी भागीदारी उतनी ही आवश्यक है.
The government says it will increase the number of hospital beds with oxygen support in rural districts which usually have ill-equipped health centers. But the challenge is in meeting the demands. Even in big cities, modern hospitals, isolation and testing centers were overwhelmed and oxygen supplies ran short. Such facilities are sparse in rural areas. Health experts say a slow pace of inoculating the countryside, where two-thirds of the country lives, will make it harder to counter the fury of India's second wave. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Mumbai.
At the launch of this year's Rohingya Refugees Donor Conference, Bangladesh led a chorus of growing voices calling for durable solutions to resolve the ongoing crisis. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
New pledges have been rolling in, but UN agencies are expressing concern about donor fatigue. They worry they might not receive the $943 million they need to assist 1.4 million Rohingya refugees and the Bangladeshi communities hosting them in Cox's Bazar. Last year, the UN's $1 billion joint response plan garnered only 60% of that amount. Bangladesh State Minister for Foreign Affairs, Shahryar Alam, says the launch is the fourth annual appeal for the Rohingya temporarily sheltering in his country. He says he wondered how long the refugees can continue to suffer in overcrowded camps and how long the international community can sustain such massive humanitarian support. He says it is important to seek a permanent solution to the Rohingya refugee crisis to avoid repeating similar exercises every year.
All undertakings under the GRP or any other funding mechanism should be implemented, keeping this overarching objective in mind. The priority areas that have been identified in the GRP must be aligned with the core objective of preparing the Rohingyas for their return. And any projects such as education or skill development should be designed and implemented in ways that will help Rohingyas to integrate in their society upon their return to Myanmar.
The minister acknowledges this might not be the most propitious time for the Rohingya to return home. UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, agrees the military coup by Myanmar's generals on February 1st precludes the safe and dignified return of the refugees. He says the UNHCR and other agencies are present in Rakhine State in Myanmar to create the conditions necessary for the refugees to return to their homes of origin.
Clearly, this has not happened so far because besides the work that we do, more action needs to be taken on the Myanmar side in terms of freedom of movement, access to services, ending the discrimination that has caused, in fact, the exodus of people into Bangladesh.
Meanwhile, High Commissioner Grandi says the Rohingya people must not be forgotten. He says the international community must continue to support the refugees as they have no other means of survival. He notes Rohingya continue to flee violence in Myanmar. He renews his appeal to neighboring countries, mainly India and Thailand, to keep their borders open and not to deport them back to a country where their lives are at risk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
European legislators have adopted a proposal to combat online piracy of live sporting events that includes the option to remove illegal broadcasts within half an hour. EU lawmakers also called on the European Commission to amend the legislation on intellectual property rights for live sports events because they are not protected by lack of block copyright rules. The report was adopted with 479 votes in favor, 171 against, and 40 abstentions. MEPs say the new rules should not target viewers who are often not aware that the content they are watching is illegal. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington.